get one a minute.
You need a screwdriver to tune it.
Yeah, and that's in my mandolin case. See? Yeah, but I
don't think we'll need it.
Hello and good afternoon. This is a real special event for our dulcimer class, and I hope for Augusta in general to have Russell Fluharty with us for an afternoon. I think I first met Russell about 19 or 20 years ago. He was sitting under a tree with a black hat on, playing a dulcimer, and I'd not seen very many before that, and was very interested. And I heard him a long time before I saw him. It would just carry over the fields and through the trees. And I'd always thought the dulcimer was the most wonderful sound I'd ever heard, and a chance to get a closer look at someone playing while I was just a struggling beginner meant an awful lot to me. The dulcimer has a long history, but somehow it almost died out here in America. And for a long time, Russell was one of the very few people who kept that tradition going, one that seemed on the verge of totally dying out. I know today that's hard to believe, and there are hundreds and probably many thousands of people playing the dulcimer, having a good time with it, and wondering where it all came from. For most of us, if you trace each one of those people back somewhere along the way, someone who influenced them, or they heard somewhere along the way, if you go back far enough, most of those people are probably playing today because one person kept on playing for about the last 50 some odd years, and that was Russell Fluharty. So it's with great pleasure that I welcome him to be with us to play some of the old-time dulcimer music and tell us some of the stories about how in the world he ever got started on an instrument like this. Will you please help me make welcome Russell Fluharty?
Thank you, Sam, for the nice things you said about me. You know, it was a long time there, nobody said anything about me. I was telling Sam before we had lunch, a long time ago I decided I would write a little history about the dulcimer, about its life and so on like that. So I sat down and the first line was, it was born here. I'm talking about home up to Mannington, West Virginia, and there was a lot of dulcimers and players around there when I first started. And then I said it lived here. Couldn't think of nothing else, so just said it died here. And really, at that time, that's what I thought was going to happen to it. There was no way in the world, because nobody, lots of people had instruments, but Grandpappy had played it, or Uncle, or something, and they'd never even tried to play one. It was in the greenhouse loft, or the attic, or someplace, when I would ask them what they're going to do, we couldn't do anything with this instrument because it belonged to Grandpa and so on like that. But 10 years later, when you would go back there, they'd throwed it away. They'd put in the garbage, or the rats had eat it up, or something that happened to it. They didn't have them anymore. And they just, even with me playing, they went ahead and died out in the Mannington area anyhow. They was all gone, even the players and the instruments. But I hung on to mine, and my wife would say, for about 40 years, as far as I knew, I was the only person, and I would say so, I'm the only person playing this kind of instrument. And nobody ever come along and said, now, look, we know somebody's playing one. And I played some of the places like the Newport, Rhode Island Folk Festival, the National Folk Festival, the Smithsonian Folklife Festival, where I would meet Sam Rossetti, and places like that, the Philadelphia Folk Festival. And I did travel shows for the Commerce Department of West Virginia, which they did all over the eastern part, and I played everywhere. And no kidding, all the big TV stations like WBT Charlotte and KDK and on and on, I had a standing invitation. Anytime you're in town, stop by, we'll put you on the air. And I did that, just that very thing a lot of times. But I kind of taught myself. When I got up, my uncle gave me this instrument. It came down through my family. And he was a game hunter. And he told me, he said, I have an old dulcimer in the grain house loft that I'll give you. He knew I picked banjo and guitar and played fiddle a little bit, that I will give you if you learn to play one tune on it. So I took it home. I had it about a year, and he asked me about, have you learned to play it yet? No, haven't. So he said, I'm going to take it back if you don't learn to play something on it. So I did. I learned to play this tune right here. Sound like this. Then I discovered I had another hand. And I made it sound like this. Skip, skip, skip the maloo, skip, skip, skip the maloo, skip. Skip the maloo, skip the maloo, my darling. Little red wagon painted blue, a little red wagon painted blue, a little red wagon painted blue. Skip the maloo, my darling. And that's the way I got my old instrument, this fella right here, which is 144 years old now. It's really older than that, but that's as far back as I could trace it. The last man that owned this, and when I took it to him, I asked the man, his brother, I said, where did you get this instrument? Well, my uncle told me where he got it. Johnny Coon was the miller. He said it got off my brother Charlie, and Charlie lived right next door. So I goes over to Charlie, and I said, where did you get this instrument? Or did you? Oh, yeah, he said, we had that here. And I said, where did you get it? And he said, don't know, just seemed like it was always here. So, and that's kind of the way people looked at the dulcimer. But then I taught myself, because at that time I had never heard a dulcimer player. Fact is, didn't even know what the word meant. You know, didn't know it meant a musical instrument. By the way, I did know of a Varner man that had an instrument, and somebody said that his family had dulcimer in it, and I went to visit him, and he said, oh yeah, there's one here someplace, and he said, I think I know where it is. So he went and looked, and sure enough, he came back with a little wooden box with a string on it, or even the marks of a string had been on there. And I looked at it, you know, and I was a little bit kind of embarrassed for him, you know, when I said, he said, here she is. Held her out to me. I said, but how did you play the thing? And he looked at, he said, oh, did you play it? He knew it was his dulcimer, but he didn't know it was a musical instrument. I'm going to do the tune that I did for years when I started to play, and that's when you and I were young, Maggie. Thank you. That was my theme song. Dulcimers kind of seem like they're alive. Well, this old fellow become part of me, and I wouldn't go anywhere without him, and he wouldn't go anywhere without me. Somebody mentioned the name Flaherty. O'Flaherty was Irish all the way. I used to be one of the minority group, but then I discovered I was American, and I belonged to everybody. after I learned to play a little dulcimer music, I discovered that my mother was a dulcimer player, and she taught me this little tune here, and it's called an Irish jig. Now, sound better already. That's good. Get an award for doing more for country music, mountain music, folk music than any man in the world. It's quite an honor, you know, that would be. And he did it with his tune, The Great Speckled Bird. Now, along comes Kitty Wells, and with her Wild Side of Life, same tune Roy Acuff had. He did, she got in the Country Music Hall of Fame. They both got their tune from a little old tune called Thinking Tonight of My Blue Eyes that I've been playing all my life, never amounted to nothing. I'll show you why.
What a beautiful thought I am thinking. Concerning that great pickle bird. But I know that her name is recorded in the pages of the Holy Word. Didn't know God made honky-tonk angels. Might have known that you'd never make them wise. You gave up the only one that ever loved you. And went back to the side of life, my tune. So I'm thinking tonight of my blue eyes, who is sailing far over the sea. Oh, I'm thinking tonight of her only, and I wonder.
Thank you, thank you. You know, I have West Virginia's national anthem. Good. Demonstration, Sam, could last all night or all afternoon. I need to get Mommy down there. Come on, my wife. My little Marge. Always. You're really not going to believe this, but I met my wife while playing for the Indian medicine shows. It used to go up and down the little valley, up past Mannington, towards Wheeling, towards Littleton, 100, Farmington. And by the way, we've been married 100 years.
Just seems that way.
Well, 50 for her and 50 for me. And I was playing a Hawaiian guitar for the Indian medicine shows, you know, and after we got married, well, she liked the music, and after we got married, why, she got herself a ukulele and a grass skirt. By the way, what happened to that grass skirt?
Well, I heard the thing.
She heard the thing. But we did some, we used to do some authentic Hawaiian tunes. Maybe we might demonstrate one of them, but I left them a little fiddle outside, Sam, so it should have brought them. But anyhow, we'll leave the Hawaiian out of it. But, you know, I like to think when our forefathers came into this part of the world, it was wilderness. All wilderness, nothing but great big trees. And they had to chop them down, roll them in the holler in order to make room for to build a house or grow a garden or a field or something. And Grandpappy did a nice job of it. He done something to make America the greatest nation in the world. And we all know it is. But he sang songs like, "Do Lord Remember Me," or "When the Saints Go Marching In, Lord, I Want to Be in That Number," or "Give Me That Old Time Religion." And I like to think of him coming over here with his wagon and his axe and doing that, and his dulcimer on his back. Help us. You all help.
Oh, and the saints go marching, marching, marching.
That has to be wild, wonderful West Virginia music, don't you say? Huh? Nowhere on this planet did you ever hear a sound like that. Thank you all for helping us sing. You know, some of the greatest experiences I ever had was with the people that helped me do this. Because without your help, I couldn't do it. I run out of gas and it's too high, all like that. You know, mentioned about the Hawaiian tune. Let's see if we can do. Nyakahuli hikadula, I'm coming back to you, my hula hoo. Beside the sea of Waikiki, you'll play for me, and once again you'll sway my heart away with your yakahula hikadula doo. Why don't we kind of have a little intermission, Sam, and just talk a little bit? Be all right with you? Maybe somebody'd have a favorite tune or something. And by the way, not much of a salesman, but I do have a sign. Tubby Fitz Randolph's doing some, he's the Whittler, their carver, was in here a little while ago, and he said that he used to say, well, if we just wait till Russ gets done putting up his show, you know what we're all doing. Does anybody have a question or something you'd like to say? Or Sam, do you have something you'd like to say or something you'd like for me to do if I could?
Well, I always liked the story about how you bagged that dulcimer in the first place.
Yeah, all right. Like I said a while ago, my uncle was a game hunter, and we took turn about. One night we hunted, he would take the game, and the next night I would take it, you know. So this night, it was in the wintertime, in January, cold, 10 below zero, and we'd walk 9 miles out the ridges, caught a big raccoon. I'm carrying the thing, it's mine. Weighed about 35 pounds. So and when we come back close to the house, he said, now, about that old dulcimer, and he'd mentioned it to me several times before, and he said, I wish you'd do something with it. And I'm so cold, so tired, so hungry, so sleepy, I just said, I'll take it. So we came down to the house, and he went up in the greenhouse loft, and I said he ruckled around. I don't know what ruckled means, but anyhow, he did. He was gone for a half an hour, and I about froze to death, and he said, brought it down and gave it to me. I'm coming down the valley with that thing on my shoulder and a big raccoon in my hand. I'm about 19 years old, and I thought, boy, am I glad it's dark. If anybody would see this, they just couldn't believe it. Fact is, I didn't hardly believe it myself. You could imagine this old fella here, and I had him up on his edge, you know. Big raccoon to the tail, and I couldn't hardly keep him off the ground because he was a big fella. But that's how I got my old instrument. And once upon a time, I don't know where your students are from, Sam, but when Governor Moore was governor before, he sent word up to me, he said, I'm having a Republican governor's conference down at the Greenbrier Hotel. Would you come down and play us a little music? And I said, I would. Be glad to. So I went down, and I drove in front of the big steps, you know, that goes up into the big hotel. And I unloaded this old dulcimer, and I had it in this case with a handle on it, and I had two or three other little instruments under my arms and a little suitcase. Now I'm going up them steps, you know, and security guard pecked me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, buddy, what do you got in the little gritchel?" I said, "Two cowbells." And he says, "Two cowbells I've got to see." So I just laid my instruments down on the big steps, you know, opened my little suitcase up, took out two cowbells, and I rung them things with all my might. You could have heard me for 4 miles. And group of people there happened to be Nelson Rockefeller and his wife, Ronald Reagan and his wife. So I've been fortunate enough to play for a vice president and the president of these United States. So in some of my episodes, that was quite a thing, Sam, really was. And demonstrating the dulcimer to him, see, I played Skip to Malou, and when I come to that verse where it says, "A little red wagon painted blue," see, Ronald Reagan said, "Hey, buddy, that's a new one on me. I never heard it that way." So I know a verse of Skip to Malou that Ronald Reagan don't know. Does anybody have a something you'd like to tell me or ask me?
How young are you?
Well, I'm coming up my next birthday, which will be this year. I'll be 80 years old. Been here quite a while, but just seems like a few months, really not very long. And when Sam was telling him about trying to keep this alive, no kidding, I played back in the older days, I played for everything and everybody and everywhere. I can't hardly go any place that I didn't play there. Years ago, I used to come in here and stay at a little hotel down here and played at the YMCA when the Forest Festival was first started. Maybe some of you people here might remember that I did that little trick. Not a town in West Virginia that I haven't been there, as far as I know. Haven't played in the schoolhouses, in the churches, in the rest homes, what have you. I go there and play. But somewhere there has to be a stop to this thing, and I'm so proud of people like Sam and you all that has helped keeping this thing going. To me, it was a kind of music that just never should be lost. And I'm sure at one time that it was lost when I first started to get to going. And my information on the thing is the best that I could get was the instrument came from Persia and Arabia into the United States and then on to America, the idea coming, they build them. But anyhow, I'll tell you what I've done. I've played places where the Chinese people were, and the minute I hit one of these strings and went, they come alive, and you ought to see that look in their eyes. So it's farther east than what the history book said. I mean, it's in the people out right there. You can see it and know that it's there. A mossy mound That is where my mother's sleeping, in the cold and silent ground. I was young, but I remember on the night my mother died. I stood there and nearly fainted as she called me to her side, saying, darling, I must leave you. Angel's voices guide me on. You have no one left. I know.